Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Pedagogy Matters podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to bring to the fore some key topics of conversation in relation to learning and teaching, to discuss and break down aspects of practice and provide snippets, advice and guidance as to how to integrate these into our daily practice. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Kenji Lam, digital lead here at CDN, where we're discussing AI. Kenji, good afternoon, how are you?
I am good, and I haven't come alone. I've brought AI with me.
Hey, that's one way to whistle already from the outset. So you've kind of brought AI with us. Well, in that case, I think what we'll do is hang fire on that for now. What I think I'm keen to know, and I'm sure listeners are, is to a complete novice, what is AI? What is it? What does it mean? There's lots of talk about it at the minute, but what does it actually mean, stand for? Yeah, over to you.
Artificial intelligence, AI, is when a machine has been designed to mimic human ability in some kind of way. And this has been going on since the 50s. I remember when I started studying computing, and people were talking about AI, and I had this amazing idea as to what that actually was. At that time, it was probably visions of HAL in A Space Odyssey 2001, or in my case, Doraemon, which was a robotic cat. But when I started learning about it, it turned out that AI was really a set of fairly complicated rules, almost like a series of if-then statements. And I was slightly disappointed by the whole thing. But they worked really well. There's a famous example, I think, back in the 60s called Eliza, which played the role of a computer psychotherapist, which was good because basically you ask a lot of questions and you get the person to talk about themselves. So it was based on this kind of pattern matching framework where you would type something in, it would pick out the keyword and then spit back a predefined response or a question to tease more information out. So if you said, I'm feeling great today, it would come back with, oh, why are you feeling great? And it would simulate this kind of conversation. From there, we've moved on quite a bit. Computers use machine learning and deep learning, which allow them to really learn from their own input and experience and improve the models as they go. Michael Webb from JISC, who's speaking at our AI in College Education event, he really explains how the current systems work and operate in a simple way that, you know, using words that someone like me can understand.
And that's interesting. And you've alluded to a couple of things that have kind of made it more prevalent recently. But yeah, what I'm keen to unpick is how has it evolved over the recent years? So you've mentioned there's loads of examples. Could you give us kind of one or two examples of as to where it's part of our commonplace and kind of where it came from and how we've got to where we are now?
So the AI is everywhere, working behind the scenes, where we probably don't know it, it's there. If we're searching for stuff on Google, there's definitely AI that is bringing back or helping to bring back a list of results that are more relevant to what we're probably looking for. And those results have got better and better over time, although it's incremental, so we might not always notice the effect that it has. It's in everyday life. I'm diabetic, and I go for annual screenings for my eyes just to see if there's any problems being developed. And typically they take a couple of pictures of your eyes, then a consultant or a specialist will look to see if there's the potential of damage or problems that are coming up that they can address. And that's, well, I kind of assumed that it was always just a people doing that. But I was, at my last visit, I was talking to the specialist and she was saying, we've been using AI for years. So we use this program called AutoGrader. And it basically looks at the scans and it picks out or flags the scans that they think have problems. and then a consultant will come, double check it and sign it off. And she was telling me when it was first used, people were really skeptical. You know, it won't be as good as a human, threat to my job and all the kind of usual stuff. But they had decided apparently at the time only to use the auto grader during peak demand when there was a rush and you just needed to get things done. It was an extra pair of eyes. And she said, the strange thing is over the years, it's got better with more data, more examples, better training, better software. It detects a lot more incidences, and it's not exactly comparable to a consultant, but getting closer. And the thing that's changed the most is attitude, really. Just the way it's become accepted as another tool. For me, so I have a background in ESOL. I started out as an ESOL teacher. That's my educational route in before I moved over to technology. So I've always appreciated just the humble spell check, to be fair. I'm an English teacher, but spelling. There are times, you know, when you're typing fast, I'm telling you. And I used to manage a group of teachers, and I swear they used to stare at all of the emails I used to send out and just wait for all the inevitable slip up that I made. So spell check has certainly saved my life. And that's only got better. You can see it when you're typing emails in Google or Microsoft. You can see the way it's suggesting to complete your sentence. And more often than not, I'm just hitting enter and accepting the suggested phrasing. Those things just increasingly I've come to accept. And it works well in things like speech to text or voice recognition. I remember as an English teacher, I used to teach lessons on pronunciation. I'd write out a sentence and I would get my students to read it out to the computer through some dictation exercise so that they could replicate what was written on the screen. And in the early days, this is going back a couple of decades, you would find that the speech recognition wasn't that great. So unless you enunciated each word in a particular accent, North American at that time because I was in Canada, it wouldn't really pick up on what you were saying. And students had to struggle to sort of copy the accent that the computer was expecting. And to much frustration, it was a fun exercise, to be honest, and it really got them to concentrate on the particular pronunciation of particular sounds. So it was good for me. But the technology beat me. I mean, over time, those algorithms processing that natural language, AI has meant that now when you speak, even if you mess up on the pronunciation, or if you've got a strong accent, increasingly more accents don't really trip up the computer so much. And those exercises are quite difficult to do now. Not always, but they can be still quite difficult. But it just shows how the AI has progressed over time. It appears in things like advertising. This is not very teachery, but it's something that causes me a bit of frustration. You know, based on what you're looking for, searching for, buying, you're always getting presented with, oh, why don't you look at this? Wouldn't you be interested in buying one of these? And, you know, Amazon is definitely one of the major culprits here.
It does it far too well for my liking. You might want this, you might want that. Yeah, so it's funny because especially, and again, I've always been a big tech lover, but I've not been immersed in tech like you have across your career. So I guess in my simple world, this has obviously evolved significantly since kind of the use of tech has become a lot more mainstream in our daily lives as well as with our teaching lives. Is that fair to say and fair to assume?
Yeah. And to be fair, the best technology is probably the tech that's invisible, that you don't see. It's just happening and you don't question it. That's where it makes a real difference, I think. We just accept it or we've grown accustomed to it over time. But yes, AI is everywhere.
Yeah. So, you kind of touched upon ChatGPT, and obviously, which I'm going to say came to prominence to the to the non-tech experts, kind of really around December last year, as the answer to AI and the solution to AI. And look, this came out of nowhere. So, surprise, ta-da, it's going to fix your world, change your life, whatever. But it's not quite as simple as that, is it? Because obviously it's been around for years, and there's been lots of other AI platforms there as well. So I know when we were talking about this initially, you said, oh, that's actually version 3.5. Is that what you were saying? Is that correct?
Technically, yes. Yeah.
So tell us a bit around that in particular, and kind of, I guess, where we are now. So obviously, we've kind of shared some context. In terms of where we are now in terms of AI, yeah.
So yes, ChatGPT arrived November last year. And it's made a lot of headlines, just people fascinated by what it can do. And the GTP model at the time was released earlier. People had played around with it for a year or two. People knew that it could create a song, a poem, write some text on a subject. But when the general public got access to it in November and started to play around with the latest version, well, at the time 3.5, now it's moved on to 4, and people were just so impressed by what was being produced. It was to another level, and the speed of the technology moves very quickly. So the first examples were really around those kind of wow, it can write a short essay, it can have a dialogue, something that people overlook. Usually they just ask one question, get one answer, and stop there. The real thing about ChatGPT is the chat bit. It's about the fact that you can have a dialogue and continue talking about the same subject, referring back to things that you've said before, and the conversation continues and builds that in. That whole experience was something close to the sci-fi characters that we'd read about in the past. Now it's not the only model that's out there. You know, Facebook, Google, others have these, and other platforms have been developed, but this is the one that we got direct access to that we could play around with. And the GPT, its model, it powers lots of things, everything from, you know, language translation to content creation. You know, these tools have been available through other paid services where you could get it to write short blog posts on a variety of topics. And I have friends who are writers for the web, and they're continuously churning out stuff. It makes it sound worse than it is, but they have a lot of pressure to produce a lot of material for the insatiable appetite that is the web. And tools like this, which allow you to produce something that's almost copy ready, just needs a bit of tweaking, and they can put it straight up there. It's there. It's being used in industry. The headlines really came about when people started asking ChatGPT to answer a test. Basically, they took questions from whatever test paper was around, and they got ChatGPT to come back with a response. And the response, although it wasn't scoring A's or whatever at the high end, it was good enough. And it was much better than people had been expecting. And I think that started the whole discussion around worries around what it would mean for assessment, education, schools, colleges, universities. And that has driven a lot of the attention. But the technology now, it can be applied in so many ways. Another popular area is coding. This is available through various services, but again, OpenAI's Copilot, which is available through GitHub and free to students, allows you to either have code explained or generated through the tool. And it's impressive. I mean, you can do the same things through ChatGPT as well, but in Copilot, it's what they call a pair programmer, or acts as a pair programmer. And if you're on your own and starting out, it's pretty impressive that you can just describe what it is you're looking for, something, a piece of code to do, and it will generate a pretty good example of that code. It's not perfect. There are elements where if you think about the cybersecurity or the efficiency of the particular code, or it doesn't quite understand what your needs are, but you can refine it as you go through it, offers a brilliant starting point. Alongside that, there are areas such as, there's a great example of film production, which is not something you might think that a text generator might be able to do, but there is an example of a studio that produces a short film through ChatGPT. So basically they get GPT to write a script, but then also write director notes to direct the production of the short film. And I'll add a link to show you what they came up with. It's not brilliant, but an interesting adaptation of the technology. And of course, when we're talking about teaching, you can generate useful teaching resources through this. For example, Richard Scott from Ayrshire, who's again speaking at our event, he'll go through the process of creating lesson plans, which is a really popular topic at the moment. And he's been building lesson plans in his own curricular area, but also working with staff across his college, looking and exploring about different lesson plans for different curricular areas. And what he's generating is really interesting. There is creativity there, like coming up with approaches and ideas that you might not first thought of yourself, but giving you that sort of starting point to build on it. the possibilities seem to be endless.
Well, I think that's fascinating. I know kind of from our conversations you've shared, look, it's not just chat. I always get mixed up, but it's not just chat GPT. It's going to be immersed everywhere. You've talked about imagery, and it's going to be kind of integrating the Bing and all sorts of different kind of avenues now that become part of our daily work and our daily practice. That kind of AI, as well as whether it's chat GPT or something else. And plus, there are many other solutions out there right now that are currently active that can be used as part of our practice.
There has been a lot with images and AI, and they've been around for a while now. You'll see a lot of applications that can take something that's in your existing image and rub it out as if it wasn't there. So you're taking a picture of a crowd, but one person you might not want to be there. You can almost magically rub your cursor over that person and they disappear, and the background that was behind them suddenly magically appears. It's always impressive when that happens, but that's AI making an educated guess as to what should be behind that person and replacing them. The tools that have come onto the scene, like Midjourney, which is a popular one, DALL-E 2, version 2 now, and Stable Diffusion, are image creators that with a simple text prompt can produce an entirely new original piece of art, really. Although when I say simple, it is possible just to type in text describing some scene in your head, but what comes back often needs a lot of tweaking to get the actual image that you can use. And last year, Dean from Fife College had helped us produce, a new image, a new logo for our Scottish Moodle user group. SMUG, literally the best acronym that we've ever come up with. But we'd been using this logo for years, this backdrop, every time we use presentations and record content that we put up. And Dean had come up with this new image that looked great. And he'd produced it entirely within Midjourney. That kind of image creation is going to be useful. I mean, just the ability to produce something quickly and original based on any kind of text input. I mean, you could put anything, poetry, anything that just flies into your head, the computer will produce something interpreting the language to create some really original stuff. Now, there is some controversy in that these models have been trained on millions and millions of images in some cases, and the images, there's a copyright issue because the authors haven't been consulted when the training took place, and there's a question as to, well, what's the legality of that, and that's playing out in the courts just now. Although the genie's out of the bottle, so these tools are not going away. And as well as using these tools by students and staff to come up with new images, maybe to spark imagination around a story you're creating as a kickoff point, to get students to write an essay based on some image or idea, they have practical uses too. You can, for example, you can get an image creator to develop a website design. Type in the kind of website that you're looking for, the kind of pages, and it'll spit back like an amazing, or after a bit of tweaking, a design that just looks ready-made to go up onto the web. I mean, you'll have to code behind it, but other tools will produce all the code for your website, but that imagery is such a useful starting point. But if you want to see a good examples of how AI is used more broadly, JISC have their National Center for AI. And on there, there's an explore part of the site that takes you through how AI has been used for kind of image capture, image generation. There is ChatGPT and other tools, how you can use it creatively in educational sort of areas. Like when you're writing an essay, start out with an outline and then build from there. There's lots of really interesting sort of examples to play through. And some of it requires an institutional login, but if you're one of the colleges or universities that, well, all of them are on the JISC network, they'll give you access to a really sort of good set of examples. And that's another aspect of these AI tools, accessibility. It helps with things like Apple VoiceOver. When you've got all of that text to speech, the tools now will recognize words that are in our daily view when we look out. Signs, the AI will determine when part of a picture includes words and then read those words out to somebody who has visual difficulty, for example. That kind of optical character recognition, OCR, is being part of the suite of tools that are available to us. Even now, you'll see the latest ones, when the PC looks at any scene, it can start to pick out and identify the objects in front of it, recognizing people. You see that when you use your camera on your phone or any reasonably modern camera now will pick out the face and zoom in and make sure that that's focused upon when you take your pictures. It's all over the place. I keep saying that, but it's so true. One thing I should say is that it's not always reliable.
And that was going to be the point that comes up. This one's kind of had a little play around, not nowhere near to the level that you have. You're absolutely right there. You know, for me, it allows you to ask some questions, it can kind of curate some information, it can kind of gather some information. But I'm still of the belief then that you have to kind of interpret that in your own way, put your own stamp on that, and kind of reframe that then for how you want to use it. And that's just kind of one example as to how it can be used there as well. But as always, mindful of time, I think we could talk about this for 2, 3, 4 hours. And the good news is we can do it in the coming weeks, which we'll talk about shortly. And you've kind of alluded to a little bit about kind of what the future looks like. But I guess would it be fair to say we don't actually know what the future will look like in the space, because, you know, the phrase used a lot is kind of genie out of the bottle, kind of first with technology and COVID, but kind of now with AI and kind of how quickly it's evolved, how quickly it's adapted, but also how quickly, I'm going to say, mainstream audience has picked it up as well. and kind of being keen to explore and kind of look at how it can be adopted in the real world. But I guess at this point in time now, March 2023, what does the future look like, Kenji, in this space?
So there's going to be more choice in AI. Microsoft are already expanding their AI offer into Word, Outlook, all those things are going to come soon. Google are doing the same. They are putting their own AI models into their own services. And there's a lot of commercial companies who are just rushing to market with solutions. And even though AI isn't perfect, may never be, it's getting better all the time. So all these features will just improve. There's a quote going around by a guy called Santiago who says, AI is not going to replace you, but someone using AI will. Okay, so that's it makes it sound like a threat, but it's not. AI is an opportunity, and it's going to be everywhere. It's something I suppose that we have to embrace, and we have to show our students how to get the most from it. And the best way of doing that is really just playing around with it just now to see what it can do, to see what the possibilities are, because people are coming up with new ideas all the time. I suppose it makes sense. I did say I was bringing AI with me. So this is not ChatGPT, but another model which has a voice interface called Alice. And it's produced by a company called DID. I'm always getting that wrong. Anyway, right. So let me ask Alice a question. Let me just turn it on here. Okay. Hey, Alice. Can you tell me how AI is going to change college education?
Sure, Kenji. The future of AI in college education is very exciting. Many experts believe that AI will revolutionize the way students learn and how colleges operate. AI will help personalize education and provide students with a more engaging and interactive learning experience. AI-powered tools can help educators to identify areas where students are struggling and provide targeted interventions. Moreover, AI will help colleges to streamline administrative tasks and optimize their operations. Colleges will be able to use AI for tasks such as grading, scheduling, and course planning. This will free up time for educators to focus on teaching and research, and ultimately improve the quality of education.
So, yeah. You know, I did think about just getting AI to answer everything you asked me.
And that's excellent, but frightening at the same time. You know, and having worked... You know, across education for, I'm going to say, not for too many years, that's kind of a negative phrase, but kind of 16, 17, 18, I forget how many years, it's the workforce is incredibly diverse in terms of digital capability, digital awareness. So, yeah, it's incredible, frightening at the same time. And I think that's going to kind of help us bring to close this conversation, not that I want to, but just mindful of time, is you've alluded to a couple of points there in terms of the final point for me is kind of where now, where do we start, what do we do? You've touched upon, yeah, absolutely. Go play with it. Go immerse yourself in the space. Talk to people, understand what it can and can't do. Speak to your students to establish what it can and can't do and how they're using it. Speak to industry, again, to understand, and that'll be ever-changing in terms of kind of how they're currently using, how they will be using this in the future, because ultimately we're preparing our students for that next step, which typically is industry. So, yeah, there's a lot to start there. And Kenji also will go an event on the 22nd, is that correct? 22nd of March?
22nd of March, and we're drawing speakers from the college community who are already exploring and using this with their students. And so we'll provide some guidance around how you can put together the best prompts if you want to get something from AI. We'll talk at just what the implications are for policy, how colleges might respond to this in encouraging, I would say, hopefully, encouraging our students and staff to get the best from it, and talk around just examples about what the student perspective is, how it's being used, and how it could be used in educational ways. And we'll record everything and make it available. Although if you're listening to this in April or May, I swear that everything will have moved on by then. Just go to YouTube and look it up. Or in fact, just ask your smart speaker. It probably knows.
No, fantastic. Thank you, Kenji. And again, for information on an event the 22nd, please look at CDM's website and kind of get that information. And really, this is just the start of the conversation, because there's a lot more there. There's a lot of potential benefits around AI and educational workload and so on and so forth. But yeah, we'll kind of follow Kenji and follow ourselves, kind of look at kind of the work we're doing in that space. But Kenji, as always, fantastic. Thank you for your time, font of all knowledge. And yeah, look forward to seeing how this evolves.
Always a pleasure.